ప్రేమ స్వరూపులైన విద్యార్థులారా, విద్యా బోధకులారా, విద్యాభిమానులారా,
I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the DSI podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form. Pradhani here. We're two-thirds of the way into Discourse 6 as Swami coaches us on holding the reins. So far, Swami has revealed to us how to stop horsing around with our externally oriented senses and instead rein them in by directing our minds towards the buddhi, or intellect. We learnt that our thoughts mould our reality as they ricochet back to us as reflection, reaction, resound. Swami also gave us fresh perspective on how to exterminate those pesky silverfish from our minds with the refreshing ambipurity of good and godly thoughts. Last episode, we were left on a precipice as Arjuna made the observation to Krishna that the mind is strong, stubborn, fickle, and turbulent. So then, with a mind like this, how is peace possible at all? Swami hands us a telling verse from the Gita.
Iyo hi garavasyasa garajyanam visishyate jana karma palagyani yavasyanti anantaram shanti 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 ekkada nunchi vastundi manaku shanti shanti ki taginatundi oka prayatnam manam chestunnama.
Better than mechanical practice is knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. Better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of actions. For peace immediately follows such renunciation. Peace, peace, peace. Where does peace come from? Are you making efforts to get this peace? The verse Swami just quoted sequentially links abhyasa, or practice, all the way through to shanti, peace, the constant, determined practice of letting go of bad thoughts and holding on to good ones is ultimately what grants us peace of mind. Swami points out that the peace we're all clamoring for doesn't have to be imported from somewhere external. This peace is within us. It is to tap into this peace that we need to resort to practice. What type of practice, you ask? First of all, we need to give up all individualistic, selfish thoughts. Then, persistently engage in the constant inquiry of what we really are. Swami has slowly shifted our focus from the indiscriminately destructive silverfish to an even more destructive type of fish, selfish. Now, Swami isn't talking about selfishness in the conventional sense here, you know, being greedy or egocentric. He's alluding to a much broader, deep-seated type of selfishness that's so ingrained in us that we've almost become oblivious to it. What does this tricky and ever so subtle selfishness look like? Take, for example, the well-intentioned questions we were probably all asked as kids. What do you want to be when you grow up? Or the question you're greeted with each morning at your local coffee shop. What would you like today? These seemingly harmless questions are so intertwined with this psychosomatic apparatus, what this body wants, what I feel like drinking today, that they perpetuate our sense of separateness from everything and everyone around us. In a Krishna Jayanti discourse on August 21, 1992, Swami shines the light on this insidious beast. He says, "A life related to the body, the senses, the mind, and the intellect can never be free from selfishness, conceit, and ostentation." Never, Swami? Everything we do, from eating our breakfast to going to work, is essentially serving us, isn't it? Swami goes on to say that we even approach God for our own sake too. so that our wishes and desires will be fulfilled. It's suddenly embarrassingly clear how deep-seated this selfishness really is. Coming back to Discourse 6, Swami explains that in order to attain lasting inner peace, the state of being we all yearn for, we must first give up all selfish thoughts. This, he tells us, is the necessary first step in the process to realizing who we are. And we saw earlier, this isn't just eliminating our self-centered or self-serving tendencies, it involves giving up entirely our individualistic thinking and sense of separateness to the point of oneness. So this is step one in the method of practice, giving up all individualistic, selfish thoughts. Step two in the path to peace involves persistently engaging ourselves in the constant inquiry of what we really are. We've touched on self-inquiry in the previous episodes, and Swami elaborates here by instructing us to not only repeat to ourselves, "I am man, I am man, I am man," but to strengthen this conviction with the affirmation, "I am not animal, I am not animal, I am not animal." He explains that we are given the name of man because we are endowed with manas, or mind. As such, in order to be truly deserving of the title of a human, Swami tells us we must mould our mind in the proper manner which befits a man and not a beast. I am man. Why does this statement require repetition? What is so unique about being human? Luckily for us, Hislop, an old-standing devotee of Swami, asked Swami this question directly. In the book Conversations with Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba, Swami answers Hislop's question. Man can raise himself to union with God, whereas the animal can never be free of its natural state. Swami goes on to explain that this opportunity of human birth cannot be gotten on any other planet or region in the indescribable vastness of the universe. Unfortunately, man has no appreciation or understanding of this. Swami continues, "Only through the human birth may God be realized. To waste time is the greatest folly. Now and here is the individual. Now and here is the opportunity to realize the absolute goal of life. Who can be sure of the conditions and status of his next birth? Not even one moment of this life should be wasted. I am man." What deep and profound meaning this statement now has. The priceless opportunity of human birth has been handed to us on a silver platter, and to be truly deserving of this opportunity, we must mould our mind in the proper manner that befits a man and not a beast. Swami says that we shouldn't condemn the mind as bad when it also has the potential to free us from this cycle of birth and death. To illustrate this point further, Swami presents a sharp analogy to describe how the mind is ultimately a tool, and so our upliftment or downfall comes down entirely to how we use it, like a knife that cuts fruit or throats. Swami then states that the mind is a cat, and that if we can understand the nature of a cat, we can also understand the nature of the mind. A cat gently shelters and carries its young kitten in its mouth to ensure the kitten's safety, and yet that very mouth can also fiercely tear a rat into pieces. This perfect analogy reveals to us that we shouldn't have kittens about the vagaries of our mind. We can't blame it for our misuse of it. Whether it contributes to our uplift or downfall depends entirely on how we choose to employ this powerful tool. Now that we're getting a feel for how to properly utilize this precious tool, that is, to infuse it with good thoughts and eliminate all selfish ones, Swami invites us to consider just how powerful our thoughts can be. He does so by turning our minds to what could be considered the primordial thought, that which gave rise to creation itself. He explains that in the beginningless beginning, God was one. Then God had a thought, "I am one, let me become many." And it was this very sankalpa, or impulse or intention behind the thought, that resulted in the vast multiplicity we see in creation today. Talk about mind-blowing! Swami highlights that it takes only a small spark to kindle a large fire. In the same way, it took only a thought to bring this entire projection into being. Ultimately, everything comes down to our thoughts. Our thoughts determine how we perceive all that we see around us. Whether we identify with the apparent separateness in creation and perpetuate those selfish sentiments, or whether we focus instead on the underlying oneness in creation, which persists amongst the multiplicity, unaffected by it. Swami cautions that we need to regulate our thoughts in the right manner. So, how exactly do we filter our every thought to ensure that we're on track towards upliftment and not bondage? Enter the intellect. Swami explains that as soon as a thought arises in us, we mustn't rush into action, but should instead subject that thought to the scrutiny of the intellect for a correct decision before we implement and act upon the thought. Swami has so beautifully deconstructed the method to enjoy lasting inner peace. To recap, first, abandon all selfish thoughts which do nothing but magnify the mistaken feelings of division in creation. Having done so, we must then persistently engage ourselves in inquiring into our true nature. With that, we'll leave you to find your peace with this method. Take a deep breath, because next episode we'll dive headfirst into the sea of surrender as we wade through all that selfish and bathe in the endless ocean of divinity with an attitude of gratitude. Until then, stay rawesome. Be the love.